Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Health and Self-Care Podcast. I'm David Seeley. I work for NHS Somerset ICB. I'm glad to be joined today by my friend and colleague, Dr. Peter
Bagshaw, GP in Somerset and Dementia and Mental Health Specialist.
Thank you very much, Peter. And our guest today is Tim Bavistock from the Alzheimer's Society. How are you, Tim?
I'm very well, thank you. Nice to be here again. My second visit with you both. So yeah, very grateful for you to have me along.
Indeed. Thank you, Tim. And as we said before, you know, not just second visit, but we used to all work together once upon a time in Somerset in jobs previous and past now. But thank you for joining us again today, Tim. And what is your role within the Alzheimer's Society, Tim? Would you like to expand on that?
I will give you my official job title as a start for 10, and then I'll explain exactly what that means. So I'm head of local systems influencing at Alzheimer's Society. And in essence, what that means is that I look after a team that works across England, Wales and Northern Ireland, works it primarily with health and care systems on a local footprint. So to support them in prioritising dementia, also to hold them to account in what they deliver for people living with dementia and their carers. And we work alongside, obviously, more of our national offering, Alzheimer's Society, which includes working with Parliament, but also includes all of the support services that we provide here as a charity.
And Tim, is it worth just explaining to people who might not be familiar with Alzheimer's Society that it's not just about people with Alzheimer's? It's all forms of dementia, isn't it? Both Alzheimer's, vascular dementia, frontotemporal dementia and Lewy body dementia.
Yeah, indeed. The actual title of Alzheimer's Society is obviously a throwback from the past. And as you quite rightly said, we're here for anybody who has dementia, or indeed people who are worried about dementia. Whatever type of dementia that is makes no difference to us whatsoever. Thanks for clarifying.
Thank you for that, Tim. And so we're here to talk about a dementia update today and about all things dementia that have changed since the last time you joined us, which is a lot in terms of the health and care sort of landscape. And just to expand a little bit upon my nebulous, at the start I said I work for NHS Somerset. I actually am a commissioner. I'm a transformation manager for all age mental health, but that encompasses dementia as well. So a lot of work in the dementia space at the moment, trying to sort of make the case for why we need to still do something about it in the face of sort of changing national priorities over the last course of the last year. And I think in Somerset, we have decided it will remain a local priority for us, which is really, really good news. But what's been happening nationally from your perspective, Tim?
There's been a lot happening, and I'll kind of couch this by first of all saying that I totally understand that people like yourself, David, and others working out there within integrated care systems and integrated care boards, are going through a lot of changes, and that is reflected a little bit in the direction of the NHS. And there's been a lot of change since this new government came in. So I'll try not to reel off a load of acronyms, but you know, that tends to be the way it comes to me when it comes down from government. But obviously we've seen the publication of the government's 10-year health plan, which very fortunately and rather surprisingly, but in a positive way, did announce that they would have more of a focus and have what they've called a modern services framework on frailty and dementia. So a focus on dementia as part of that plan. But obviously since then, we've seen changes to NHS England. We've seen an awful lot of changes happening out there across the system. And therefore, we're not actually that much further forward yet with what that might look like. And maybe we could talk a little bit today between us with the great brains that we have about what that might need to include and what that might mean, but also reflecting the fact that the NHS is changing and that's changing the way that maybe people like yourself are commissioning things.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Peter?
And perhaps we ought to mention, David, since our last update, there's been some interesting developments on the medical side of things. So we've had these disease-modifying agents, which actually haven't made it through NICE, and we can maybe discuss them in more detail. But at least it shows that there is the possibility of modifying Alzheimer's. It's not an inevitable progression. And there's also been clarification on some of the other factors which we can do to help prevent dementia, which is very important. So I'd be keen to talk a bit about those as well, if we've got time.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a great plan. And also, yeah, document-wise, which is the driest bit of things that we talk about, but we have, yeah, Fit for the Future's come out, the sort of 10-year plan, which we touched on there, and we've got the strategic commissioning framework that's come out off the back of that, which means some changes in terms of the way we're expected to commission services. So a lot has changed, as well as the government and various other things, and a lot of the changes that have happened probably because we have a new government as well, and setting a new direction in store for travel. But like you're saying, Peter, that the DMT, that's the acronym, isn't it? The disease modifying treatments that are sort of in the pipeline are potentially the biggest game changer, as it were. But also, I mean, really, we don't know. We can't. It's not something anybody can control, is it? Whether any of those will be approved, or when they'll be approved, or what that's going to look like. So, from my perspective, what we can change is how we work, how services work for people, and putting people at the center of those services in terms of making them person-led and listening to the voices of people with dementia and their carers and families, and trying to sort of build our services around that in anticipation of hopefully a medication coming down the line further in the future. So one of the things, Tim, that I think the Alzheimer's Society was heavily involved in was the rollout of the Dementia 100 tool, which we are using in Somerset. Would you like to talk a little bit about the Dementia 100 tool, like what its purpose is and things, please?
Yeah, so I think there was a recognition. I think actually last time I was on with you, we talked around there being wild variation across the country. I was probably quite cross about it, because actually one of the things that, you know, I never want people to experience is, you know, a different level of service or care, you know, dependent on their postcode, for example. So the Department of Health and Social Care worked with some people around dementia, and they looked at what would a good framework look like, i.e. what could we say to somebody like Somerset, what are the things you need to be testing yourself against? And they came out with something called the Dementia 100, which, as the title would apply, is kind of 100 things across the whole dementia pathway that they wanted systems to kind of judge themselves against. So almost like a self-assessment on that. A big part of that, though, actually has to be asking people who live, in your case, in Somerset, you know, what their experiences are, as you say. The idea being that actually people could learn from each other across borders. I'd be really interested to know whether, you know, you're planning to do that, and whether any of, you know, the people close by you would like to partner up with and think about that. But another big part of it was just to say, you know, this is some of the evidence that's out there. These are some of the things that we know work. These are some of the things that we think you should be focusing on because of that. And so it was kind of putting that together. And actually, David, I mentioned that the government's going to come out with its own framework for dementia and frailty. Mm. I think quite a big part of that may well be based on some of the Dementia 100. My question back to you and Peter, though, would be, if you have a national document or a national framework, how much does that really matter when you've got, you know, that you've got local situations, you've probably got your hospitals full, you've probably got all of those issues that I'm seeing around the country. So, you know, how much does it matter if we have a framework? Does it help you?
Peter, I think you've got something to say.
Yes, and I would have some concerns about that. If there are 100 things that are important, probably it's difficult to focus on any of them, isn't it? If when I speak to patients, they want timely and accurate diagnosis, and they want support when they need it, and those three things are enough, really. So I don't know how the 100 fits into that, Tim.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously it delves into a lot more detail, which, you know, we won't go into today, around, you know, what kind of workforce you need, how your memory assessment services may work. It talks around prevention and awareness as well, which I think is important to be focused on. So I guess it's a tool more for commissioners and system leaders than it is for people. But Peter, just to absolutely 100% agree with you, when we talk to people, what they really want to know is they want to know what is happening to me, i.e., you know, what is my diagnosis? And they want to know that as early as possible. And I would add to your second point around, and then they want to know, well, what does that mean? How can I live my life? Do I need any care and support? But also, you know, what does it mean for my family and my carer potentially? So I think those are the things that are important to people. We've recently done another survey of over 3,000 people across the country. And one of the big things that came back was that people are still waiting way too long for a diagnosis. And that period of wait is probably more worrying than that post-diagnostic element of it, because you just don't know. I agree with you, Pete. That's why at Alzheimer's Society, we continue to focus on diagnosis. We'd like to focus more on prevention, and we will be doing so. We'd like to focus more on kind of understanding, you know, whether or not some of these things are preventable. But at the same time, we can't ignore the fact that there are people right now out there without a diagnosis. There are people with a diagnosis who are not getting the right support.
You've touched on prevention a couple of times. So is it worthwhile just sort of segueing to the side and discussing that in a bit more detail? Because there's been a lot of work around it. The Lancet is probably the main thing that people would know about. And they've added a few extra things that are around prevention. And they're now saying that about 45% of dementia is preventable with lifestyle changes. Do you want to say something about that, Tim? And I can chip in a little bit with my medical hat on as well.
Yes, I was going to say, I don't have a medical hat, but you're absolutely right. I think, you know, I think 14, Peter, modifiable risk factors that, you know, can contribute to that 45% of cases, as you say, that maybe we could, you know, reduce or at the very least delay. And I think we're looking at a 10-year plan that talked around a move from sickness to prevention, right? So I'd be really interested in your views about, and David's views actually, on whether that is possible. Because if you look at what they put in the Lancet, it would mean a reduction in the number of people living with dementia. Were we to be able to address that properly? My big issue at the moment, I don't want to throw a bomb into the roof, but actually my big issue at the moment is that, you know, we are continuing to spend far too much money and far too much resource just treating as we are now. I'm not blaming anybody for that. That's the situation that we're in. So I guess my question is, how do we make that shift, Peter? Is it just about public awareness, or is it more about moving resources further downstream to the left, if you want to call it that, downstream, so that actually, you know, we can address these and prevent some of these diseases, not just dementia?
Absolutely. I think it's both, Tim. So in my simple way, I break down those 14 into two main groups. The one other, what's good for your heart is good for your brain group around obesity, blood pressure, diabetes, all that sort of thing. And the other things are around social isolation, depression, poor hearing, poor sight. And that sort of allows me to understand these two basic things. And yes, in terms of organization, we're very much starting to look at brain health. And if people are interested, there's a little quiz you can take on the Alzheimer's Research UK website that goes into risk factors, so that you can look at what is your brain health and how can you reduce your risk of dementia. Do you think that focus on brain health is a useful one, Tim?
Absolutely. At Alzheimer's Society, you may not know this, I'm not breaking any confidences because it has now been announced, but we are pushing ahead with a brain health centre, the first one of its kind, up in Manchester, for exactly the reasons that you're talking about. Peter, is that we really need to focus on brain health and some of those modifiers, but also we need to be speaking to people a lot earlier. So we talk a lot about what's commonly termed primary prevention, some of those things you've just talked around in terms of modifiable risk factors. But we also know that there are a lot of people out there with mild cognitive impairment, so kind of not dementia. And that is the time when really you want to make some of those what we would call secondary interventions, where you might change the course a little bit of your life and how things work. So, I'm really excited to look at kind of things like brain health centers. The ambition would be to roll them out around the country if they work, but they also fit really nicely with this new government. Can I still call them a new government? I don't know. This government's kind of ambition to kind of think differently about health with regard to innovation, but also with regard to a different model of care where we're, say, intervening earlier.
Yes, and you mentioned mild cognitive impairment. I think all we know about the interventions that work for dementia is that if you've had it for a very long time and the brain is already damaged, you won't make that much difference. You've got to intervene as soon as possible. And one of the other exciting advances is an improvement in biomarkers and very early detection, possibly before we even start to get memory problems, so we can intervene at that stage. And I know, again, Alzheimer's Society are doing work on that, aren't they, which you're involved with, aren't you, David?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I was just thinking as well to one of the questions Tim posed us earlier around, like, how can a strategy document make a real difference when, you know, the health service is up against so much operational pressure all of the time, you know, and certainly when it comes to those documents and how they land with the more clinical staff. I think that certainly is true. It's about how do you interpret that? How do you actually make it real? What difference does that make to people? But in terms of what has happened recently, I think the Fit for the Future and the Strategic Commissioning Framework sort of squarely hand the mandate for changing the way that we commission services to ICBs to work with the system, to convene the system in order to actually do that. I'll use the term, Tim, left shift, which is the buzzword at the moment. Basically, what that means is moving resources away from waiting for people to be really ill and getting it to the front end to either help prevent them from getting ill in the first place or helping them to stay as well as possible within the community, living as close to home as possible, which are really obviously, I mean, it's a no-brainer really when you think about why that's important. It's important to people who, you know, may become ill or their carers and their families, but also it's important to the system in terms of helping flow through healthcare settings, particularly acute hospitals, like reducing the need for that potentially, and also cost, which is the one thing that everyone says they don't really care about, but actually they do really care about, and that drives a lot of this. But the way that it's doing it, those three key shifts around sort of moving towards prevention, moving towards a sort of digital first approach, and towards more support in the community, is certainly something that we've been working together over a number of years to try and establish within Somerset across a number of different fields. And we have something not dementia related, but called Open Mental Health in Somerset, which is a community mental health service we transformed a few years ago. And that's actually often talked about as a sort of exemplar for like how to work in a new way to shift those resources into the community towards prevention. And so I know we certainly look at it as a model of how things might be done differently, and would like to try and roll out a similar approach more broadly across things. And you know, they do a great job of putting experts by experience, which is a term for people, you know, who have been directly affected by conditions, being involved in the work to improve those services. They put them, you know, front and center, and carers and their family support. And really, that's how we're going to make any meaningful change, isn't it? Is by listening to people who need and use these services and hearing what they say and changing things.
Yeah, and I think, David, I'm obviously familiar with Open Mental Health from my time way back in Somerset. You should be really proud of what you've achieved in that sphere. And I guess what I would say is that I think it almost gives us a bit of a blueprint as well. The government's talked about neighborhood health or place-based health, which to you and I is just health closer to home or where you live. And I think what Open Mental Health taught me was that what you need is you need to harness all of those elements of the community. So yes, the lived experience, but also you need, you know, that whole host of smaller local community providers as well, which you have in Somerset, kind of coming together around a specific subject. And I would love to see us be able to replicate some of that for dementia. You know, I don't want to take us off on a tangent, but, you know, we do have some concerns at Alzheimer's Society around the neighborhood health rollout because, you know, is it going to be too clinically focused? Is it going to take into account dementia? How on earth do you solve that conundrum of, you know, you can't have a specialist in every single area or condition, can you, in a neighborhood health team? So how do you get the right knowledge for people living with dementia, you know, so that they get the right kind of support and services? You know, is that just training? Is it about using the voluntary in the community sector? I'd be interested to know whether or not you've started some of that thinking yet around what that might look like. my experience around the country is that it varies greatly. We've got some that are wholly NHS clinical models that are kind of being licked at. And then we've got others that are really embracing using adult social care and the community and others. And the one thing that I would flag about this particular model, which again, I'd be interested because of my background, would be that there should be a greater role for things like health and wellbeing boards as well, which kind of, you know, who are responsible, although they sit in the local authority, who are responsible for kind of the health and wellbeing of populations. So just be interested to know whether or not you feel that these kind of opportunities for care closer to home can meet the needs of people living with dementia in Somerset.
I think certainly if done, I think anything that we commission moving forwards really does need to be looking at the whole, what they call the ICS, the integrated care system. So that includes everybody involved in that. So you've got, you know, just to break it down for people who might not be familiar with those terms, you've got the people who are directly involved in healthcare. So whether that's doctors, primary care, secondary care hospitals, things like that. Then you've got, like you said, the council, the social care aspect. And then what we call the VCFSE or the third sector, which is obviously the Alzheimer's Society are one of those organizations, a national organization. But they vary in size, those organizations, from nationals right down to very, very small micro providers that may only employ one or two people in a certain locality. So, yeah, we can't do anything on our own. I think we've learned that lesson. We must work together. Peter?
I take the challenge still further. So we've had a lot of acronyms and so on, and you talked about improving flow through the system. I would say if people actually take on board some of these preventative messages, they might not even get involved with doctors and medical systems and in the first place. They might just keep completely well and get on with their lives. And that, to me, is the ultimate goal. And I would encourage anyone listening who's interested in this and maybe concerned about their health, say if they've got a family history or they're getting to age that I'm certainly getting to, where it's a risk, that they actually sort of look online, and most of the clever AI out there will tell them exactly what they need to do to improve their brain health. What's your feeling about that, Tim? Am I being overly optimistic?
No, but I think we're a long way away from it. But let me tell you why it's really important. I think it's absolutely right, Peter. You know, ultimately, what I really care about is can people feel well and live a good life for longer? And I think we'd all share that. There is a bit of kind of self-determination in that, isn't there, as you say? And people can go out there and they can look at that. You can look on the Alzheimer's Society website as well, where they have some tips on brain health, but also they have a checklist if you're worried about dementia. So, do feel free to look at that. There's no substitute, is there, also for making sure that you take up your health check as well with the GP, and you think about, you know, particularly for people 40 to 74, that, you know, you actually have that health check so that you can kind of fit not just for dementia, but all sorts of elements. What I would say, though, is why is it important? So let me give you, you'd expect this from me, but let me give you a few figures from a system point of view. So it's important for people, but, you know, around the country, one in six of the people in hospital has dementia at the moment in an acute hospital. You know, as you say, Peter, what we want to do is we want to reduce that pressure on hospitals. But at the same time, we know it's a really poor experience for people to go into hospital with dementia. And it's really difficult then actually to get them out of hospital and back to the life that they were leading before. So let's stop them going there in the first place. I mean, you're absolutely right. And you can take that one stage further and say, let's stop them needing to reach out to, as you say, more formal health sources in the first place. And all of those things you've talked about would help us to do that. But you have to do that on a local footing with people around them in their, you know, where they live. You can't do that through national or regional services. And so that's why it's so important for David and his colleagues in particular now to make sure that we're reaching out to all parts of the population. And in Somerset, yeah, we've got a rural population. So that means, you know, spreading the net as wide as possible with probably limited resources. So it's about that balance, Peter. But yeah, you know, I would agree with you on that one. I would much rather that none of us go anywhere near any of those medical establishments until we really, really need it.
Just going to chip into what you said, Tim, to say that for anyone, I'll give my usual plug, anyone concerned about their memory, please go and see your GP early. Because sometimes memory problems can be due to other conditions other than dementia. It can be something as simple as a B12 deficiency or something like that. So it's always worthwhile getting checked over, getting a blood test, and it might be something that can simply be put right.
I totally agree with what you're saying, Tim. And I think earlier on you mentioned like whether we were thinking about looking outside of Somerset potentially as well, because obviously some of the ICB people may not be aware, have been asked to cluster ahead of formally merging with other areas. And so we know who our partners are, and we are definitely looking to, if we make any changes, make them across a wider footprint and work with our colleagues in other areas as much as is possible.
Just quickly, though, just on that point, really, really worth bearing in mind. I think Peter touched on things like blood biomarkers and things that can kind of help kind of with that diagnosis element and a bit earlier. So just up the road from you in Bath, there is some blood biomarker work happening. So that learning across patches is going to be really, really important, I think. And, you know, hopefully you're already doing it, but we can't make advances like that in isolation in an area like Somerset, can we? You know, we need to be doing it together where we possibly can. So although I'm sure some of this clustering and these merges are at times really quite difficult, and you kind of moving away from my mantra of local, there is some logic in terms of, you know, if we can rise to the top rather than, you know, going the other way, there is some learning that we can have.
No, definitely agree. And I think the upcoming modern service framework for dementia and frailty, I think that's going to be published sort of autumn 2026 onwards, is going to be hugely important in terms for dementia and frailty, setting the sort of the roadmap for how those things that we know we have to do, more explicitly, how that should be operationalized and what that should mean. I think all the things we're talking about, as a guess, will probably be within that document, hopefully. We're starting to move that way a little bit now. And I think, they're going to sort of shift away from the dementia diagnosis rate, probably to a different measure, which might be an RTT measure, which is referrals to treatment. And I think that possibly looks like it might be a person has to have their first appointment within 6 weeks and then their care plan initiated within 18 weeks. I think that's potentially what the new sort of metric that will be used to measure how good some or bad an area is at helping people with dementia. So I think that's a huge shift. And I think that services will have to be commissioned in future with that in mind, if that is the case. But we'll have to wait and see. I think, Tim, also, you mentioned the Casey Commission. What does that involve? I probably should know.
Yeah, I mean, we probably shouldn't call it the Casey Commission because it kind of talks about, you know, the one individual that's leading it. But so obviously people will know that successive governments have kicked the issue of adult social care, kicked the can down the road, in effect. So this particular government has instated something led by Baroness Casey, hence why it's called the Casey Commission, around the future of adult social care and what that might look like. You will know, and I know, that in Somerset and in many other areas around the country, social care services are really, really stretched. And they're a big part of what we're talking about today, aren't they, in terms of health and well-being? Forgive me for saying it, David, but they are probably closer to people in our communities than maybe sometimes some of our health systems are, for example. They're working with people in their own homes on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, that review of adult social care is really important, but it's going to take, I'm trying to think of a polite word. I will think of a polite word. It's going to take forever. And therefore, we can't wait for that. So in places like Somerset, you need to be working with colleagues in adult social care and within communities and working on that overall picture. You know, if I'm a person, or one of my family, I don't care whether it's health or social care, who's delivering support to me. I'm just looking for the right support. We will be inputting into that commission. We are already inputting into that commission. I'm not expecting a sudden change to the way adult social care is delivered at the moment. It's in the control of local authorities, and therefore it's in the gift of local authorities like Somerset to continue to work with yourself. So yeah, there's an opportunity there. But I don't think, you know, we're going to solve that issue of, you know, who pays, all of that kind of stuff. We're talking 2028 probably before this. And then there'll be another election on the horizon. So who knows, it might be kicked down the road again.
And that's the problem, is it, with the electoral cycle and everything being so closely aligned with it. Just like, just as you're starting to build up a head of steam and get things going, then everything changes. Anyway, we can't change that today. I think we're also running out of time, unfortunately, so which I can't quite believe, but I think we are. So, Peter, any last words?
Can I leave people with a last message from my medical perspective, which is, if you're concerned about your memory, please go and see your GP, because it may be something that can be solved. But the new disease-modifying drugs, although they haven't passed right nice and don't look as though they're quite good enough to be rolled out, they're a sign of things to come. Lots more drugs in the pipeline. So it's a really hopeful time for dementia. And finally, I would say, if you're interested at all, go and look at your own personal risk factors and see what you can do to reduce the risk of dementia, which remains the largest killer in the UK today, doesn't it, Tim?
It does indeed.
Tim, any last words from you? What, anything you want to leave our listeners with today?
No, I think Peter's, you know, personal loss there is exactly the right one. People need to, you know, look after themselves and look after their own health, and do everything that they can to change their lifestyle if necessary. From a more broader point of view, to people is, you know, don't be afraid. And you've been good at this in some sense. Don't be afraid to kind of come forward, give your own experiences, so that we can help shape services that actually meet your needs locally. And at some site, we're really keen to do that. We're keen to work with people with lived experience. So a shameless plug, David, as well. You know, if people want to campaign alongside us, you know, sign up with us to be a campaigner. Hopefully support us so we can carry on doing all of the good work that we are doing, most of which is for free, by the way, and is not commissioned by you know, people like yourselves. But yeah, that would be my take on it. You know, come and work with us. Peter's right. Now is the time for dementia. Now is the time to make a shift. And we can do that, but only if we all do it together.
Thank you very much, Tim and Peter, for both of your wise words and your time to appear with us today. And thank you to all of our listeners for listening. Go well.